Hello, everyone, and welcome to North Coast Songwriters Spotlight. I'm your host, David White. North Coast is blessed with some amazing songwriting talent. And through this process, we're going to peel back the curtain and we're going to shine some light on the process through which these songs actually get made, from the first spark of inspiration to that final polished track. Well, hello, and welcome to the inaugural edition of North Coast Songwriters Spotlight. I'm here today, and I have the pleasure of being in the presence of Ray Raihala, who's been a longtime member, guitar and banjo player, in a fixture on the Clatsop County music scene, Brownsmead Flats. Welcome, Ray.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you. And thanks for doing this. This is a first for me and apparently a first for you, and we'll see how we do. So I'd kind of like to start at the beginning and find out a little bit about your history in terms of your musical journey. You know, how old were you when you picked up an instrument and decided that you were going to figure out how to play it?
Well, I started taking piano lessons in the first grade, so I guess that was my first exposure to an instrument. But my parents tell me that I used to stand in the crib and bounce up and down to the rhythm to the music when I was a toddler. So I probably had some musical things going on in my head at that point in time.
You were wired for it.
Yeah.
Was it a musical family?
Not particularly. My sister plays piano and flute. And both of my parents could sing on key, but I don't know other than that, and they didn't do it much around the house. So they didn't sing in public except on the, it must have been Christmas Eve and Easter when we went to church, because that's about the only churching that we did. And I know that they sang hymns then. That
was it. When you made the transition at some point to strings.
I got a ukulele to start with for a stringed instrument, and that was probably the fifth or sixth grade, I guess. And played that, and but I wanted, this was in the days of the Hootenannies, and I was watching the Kingston Trio on TV, and I thought, they don't play ukuleles, they play bigger instruments, they play guitars. So I borrowed a silver tone archtop F hole that my aunt had and started struggling with it.
That was out of the Sears catalog.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, it wasn't exactly a folk guitar, but it was free. So, and then I still was, this is about in the seventh grade, I think, I still was taking piano lessons from a gentleman in Astoria named Leon Erickson. And he was a wonderful piano teacher and a really great guy. Mm-hmm. And I would have quit after the first year if I had had to do scale exercises and play classical music and all that stuff. But he said, well, what do you want to play? And I said, I don't know, Scandinavian songs, because we're Finns. So I played a whole ton of those, and then a lot of pop stuff. And that kept me interested. But anyway, he had this, in the seventh grade, he sold me a guitar because he had bought it from Poole's Music. That was before Denny Teal bought it, and it became Teal's Music after that. But he sold me a 1958 Martin D18 for $65.
Wow.
And it was like, brand new. But he had paid twice that for it, and that was the wholesale price and probably discounted a little more. Somebody had bought it or ordered it and didn't like it and left it on the wall at Poole's Music for a couple of years. And so finally around 1960 or 61, he bought it. And then he was a serious pianist, and he didn't like the dents it was putting in his fingers.
Yeah.
So he knew that I was working on being a a guitar player, so he sold it to me, and I still have it.
Good for you. It's probably worth a heck of a lot more than you paid for it.
Yeah, well, I had it, you know, it had a lot of road miles on it and a lot of scratches and dings and stuff. And yeah. So I had it redone, you know, mm-hmm. and they say if you refinish a guitar, it lowers the value on it. It still looks a lot better, and I'm not going to ever sell it, so I don't care if I ruin the value.
Right. Tell me about what motivated you to start writing music, how did that begin?
Kind of the flats motivated me, because prior to that point in time, I had written quite a few parodies and songs that I thought were amusing and sometimes obscene, but I didn't feel competent to write both lyrics and melody. I just didn't think I had a gift for melody. Uh-huh. But the Flats are, you know, and I've been in multiple bands before joining the Flats, but the Flats are incredibly supportive of everybody's attempts. And if somebody brings a song to a practice and it's not all that good, we don't say, oh, that stinks. We say, right. We say that has a lot of potential. and you know, everybody in the band writes songs. So it was a perfect environment and a supportive environment for me to start writing.
That's great. There was a documentary I saw, I think it was on Netflix. It's called It All Begins With a Song. It was an interview with a bunch of Nashville-based songwriters. Mm-hmm. And each of them had come to Nashville thinking that they were going to, you know, write music for, you know, big artists and make their fortune. But it turns out that in Nashville, almost all the songwriting is done collaboratively. Mm. That they team up people with instrumentalists, lyricists, and arrangers.
Yeah.
And they work together to do songs. And yeah.
Well, I've never collaborated on writing a song with somebody, but I think it would be... Well, I take that back, because Ned Heavenrich, our harmonica player, provided the perfect lyric, one word, in the Lewis and Clark song. And so we said, oh, that's perfect. And so I probably should share writing credits.
Yeah. With him. Yeah, I suppose you should. How do you start? I mean, is it with a story? Is it with an idea? Is it with a melody? Is it with some chord progression?
Usually it's not a melody. I usually start with lyrics first. Mm-hmm. And then other than that, it can be very varied. I mean, I wrote a song about the stranding of the Peter Iredale on Clatsop Beach. And that was kind of a formulaic song. I mean, I went to a book called Pacific Graveyard, and Gibbs, I think, is the author. And so it gave me all of the details that I needed.
Right.
And so I just started writing verses. And one thing about being in the Flats is that for a long time we were a five-piece, we're six-piece now. But when you're writing a song, you have to have five verses so everybody can sing a verse.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is it harder or easier to write for a band than it would be just to write a song you're going to do solo?
I don't know. I think arranging them might be more complex, but I don't think writing them is any different one way or another. In a band I was in years ago, we saved our money and recorded a 45 RPM single.
Uh-huh.
And we got a guy to play pedal steel on it with us. And we knew absolutely nothing about, I mean, we had these nice vocal harmonies and stuff, and we had a lead guitar play a lead where it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But other than that, we had no clue that, oh, you know, maybe there's supposed to be fills, you know, instrumental fills coming in here.
Yeah.
Maybe it shouldn't be the same instrument every time to do this, you know. Mm-hmm. So we learned a lot from that, and the Flats have we've spent a lot of time, before, during our recordings, figuring out, okay, is there an instrumental hook we can start this with, mm-hmm. and who's going to play fills on this verse versus who's going to play fills on that verse. And so it's been a learning process for us, but it's been a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. And what a luxury to have five people who can sing.
Well, it's we're not the perfect vocal band. I always find myself being critical when we're performing and thinking, oh, that part could be better or this part could be better. But people seem to accept it and like it, so I'm happy with it.
How much of the flat's music is original versus, do you do traditional stuff?
We do traditional stuff and we do some covers. But I would say probably 50% at least is original. I never really stopped to think about that. But at least 50%, I think.
Did you have a songwriting hero when you were growing up? Somebody that really inspired you?
Well, when I was growing up, I wasn't really, I hadn't really figured out that people wrote songs, I guess. I would watch them on TV and I would think, oh, that's pretty cool. And then when I started thinking about it, I was wondering, well, did the band write them or did somebody else write them, mm-hmm. And, I love James Taylor and Rodney Crowell and Towns Van Zandt. There's all these Texas singer-songwriters. They're mm-hmm. wonderful. I don't really have one. I think, like I said, the first musical influence that I had really was the Kingston Trio. I'm sure that, some of their mm-hmm. songs were written by the band. So,
good combination of strings and vocal harmony. Inspiring.
And Peter, Paul, and Mary, and, just the early folkies.
You're listening to North Coast Songwriters Spotlight. I'm your host, David White, and today we're speaking with Ray Raihala of Brownsmead Flats. What's something that you've written lately, and how might it be different than something you wrote 20 years ago? Has your style evolved?
I'm the rare person who doesn't evolve, I think. I don't know. The probably the most recent song that I've written, there's a couple of them. One was that we do at Fisher Poets, which is coming up at the end of this month.
Yeah.
It's called The Sea Lion Serenade, and it's kind of an anti-sea lion song. In fact, it's definitely an anti-sea lion. My dad was a commercial fisherman, so, we had sort of a rivalry with the seals and sea lions as to who could get the fish out of the net first.
Right. And if you live on the North Slope, you hear the song of the sea lions every day.
Yeah. So that's another one that was kind of formulaic. So, I actually stole the melody for it from the folk process, we're allowed to do that because we're folk musicians.
Of course.
Yeah. And then the other one it's been several years back now, but we in the flats have done oodles of songs commemorating historical events.
Yeah.
So I wrote a song called the Generic Historic Anniversary Song, which is supposed to take care of any potential historic thing that's going to be having an anniversary in the future.
But
it turned out to be a little bit too complex to keep in our set list, but it's still there. It's recorded.
Yeah, I heard that one and appreciated the humor inherent in it. It was good. One of your band members described your songwriting style as being very much story-driven. Is it usually a story that you've been a part of or someone's told you that that sets your songwriting process in motion?
Well, you know, it can be anything. I mean, I wrote a song in 1996 about, that was the year of the huge rains and the flooding. So I wrote a song called We Got Rain. And that, I don't know if that's really a story song, but it's a, you know, it's a commentary.
Yeah.
Once I wrote, I woke up in the middle of the night, thinking about, you know, I just had this line in my head and it said, you better go down Jerusalem. And I didn't know what that was all about, but I kind of worked with it. And so I got a song out of that. I have a song called The Bottle Picker's Waltz that actually was written about a neighbor of mine who was, he was a gillnet fisherman, but mostly he was a drunk. And that's what he did to get money to buy more wine, was pick bottles off of the side of the road, because that was what he could do. So I don't know, you know, it's...
So slices of life sometimes become songs
for
you. Okay.
And it's not necessarily a long and involved story. It's just, you know, actually the first song that I wrote that I was, you know, proud of was written for my wife. And it's a love song. It's called The Shifting of Your Heart. That you know, just took a chunk of out of our lives when we were courting and commemorated it, I guess. So there really is no, I suppose once I retire and start writing more, if I do, although I'm horrifically lazy, so I may not. but if I do, I think that there's going to be more thought and structure going into the songwriting. There's going to be, you know, I'll be looking for topics and trying to figure out how to make them work.
Yeah. Well, take me through an example of a story that you that inspired a song, and I think we talked about one about an alligator.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it is a true story, a semi-true story anyway. We've mangled it a little bit, but I did go to college with a guy that, his name was Marshall Escola. He was another Finn, and that's how we became acquainted, as we lived in the same apartment building, and I saw this Finnish last name, so I went and knocked on his door, and said, you know, and he was really an outdoorsman, and we used to duck hunt together and whatnot. But he, after graduation, moved to Florida and became a park ranger. But he didn't care for the climate in Florida, you know, it's different than Oregon. So he moved back. And when he got back, he called me up, and I'm trying to remember, I must have been working in Teal's Music and Seaside at that time. So it was after about 1970, something like that. And he said, come on, visit me. I've got a place up here on Long Beach Peninsula. So I went up and saw him. And on the back porch of his house, he had this big galvanized wash tub, and he had a small alligator in it, and had a heat lamp hanging down over the top of it to keep it comfortable. And he says, this is Grits the alligator. And I said, you know, it's not my choice of a pet, but that's cool. You brought something back from Florida. Mm. And so time went by, and I went to visit him again, and the tub was empty and the light was off. And I said, well, what happened to Grits? And he said, well, he got too big for the tub, so I had to turn him loose. And that kind of shocked me. And so I said, well, where'd you turn him loose? And this guy was notorious for not telling the truth, but he liked to get a rise out of people. So he said, well, I turn him loose in Blind Slough. And Blind Slough is the main waterway that goes through the middle of Brownsmead, and that's where the Brownsmead boys have water skied for all these years. And so so I was a little nervous about that, but I figured that he was pulling my leg. And I think later on he admitted that he had taken it up to a zoo or something more humane than turning it out in Blind Slough. But
it's one of those examples of, do you want the truth or a good story? Right, right?
Yeah. And he, his name was Seaweed because he was a retired sailor, and so he was quite the leg puller. Anyway, so that was the genesis of the gator in Old Blind Slough, but we ran with it and expanded on it and told lies of our own. So,
okay. Would you be willing to play a little bit of that for
us? Sure,
yeah.
The first time that I heard the tale was on a day like this, when Brown's Meat Boys take sauna. Well, they like to reminisce. And though the tale was told in jest, I think it could be true, about the giant alligator in Old Blind Slough. You better watch out, the gator's gonna get you. You better watch out, the gator's gonna get you. It's a real alligator, yeah, sure, you betcha. The gator in Old Blind Slough. Story goes that Seaweed took a job down in the south. He became a ranger near the Okeechobee's mouth. But he got lonesome for the north, and when he called it quits, he brought back home a gator by the name of Grits. The little feller sure was cute. He kept it in the tub. But as all gators do, he had an appetite for grub. The more he ate, the more he grew. What could Seaweed do? He had to turn that gator loose in Old Blind Slough. Well, now the chances were not good that Grits would flourish or would thrive. In fact, the odds were poor that he could even stay alive. But winter came on mellow, thanks to good old El Nino. And Grits the gator ate and ate, and oh, how he did grow. Oh, you better watch out, the gator's gonna get you. You better watch out, the gator's gonna get you. He's a hungry alligator, yeah, sure, you betcha. The gator in Old Blind Slough. There's more, but it's a real long song.
That's great. That's great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Ray, I wanted to ask you, given the fact that you've been writing music for a long time, you say that your library isn't vast, but you've been doing it for a good long time, and you've learned a lot of things about what works and what doesn't. What's the best piece of advice you might give somebody who wants to be a songwriter, maybe wants to make the transition from just being a musician to being somebody who creates music, new music?
I think probably all that I would say is just do it. You know, it may not be wonderful at first, but you know, keep at it. I was really reluctant for a lot of years, and I kicked myself because I probably could have written quite a few tunes through those years had I not been sort of scared, you know. And it's not rocket science. Just, you know, come up with some kind of a melody and figure out what you want to say and figure out how to make it rhyme or at least flow and go for it.
Yeah, I saw an interview with a jazz pianist who writes a lot of music with vocalists,
mm-hmm.
and he said he has to write 20 songs to get 2 good ones. So, I mean, would you agree with that? I mean,
I'm still on the shy side of 20, and I'm not sure that any of them are really any good, so yeah. Much less 2. So,
and he keeps a little notebook with him everywhere he goes, and just writes down things that might inspire.
That seems to be something that real serious songwriters do, I guess I still have time to get serious about it, and I'll work on that.
Yeah. Well, if you could magically collaborate with any songwriter, living or dead? Who would that be?
Who would that be? Gosh. I really don't know. There are so many good ones. I do like James Taylor a lot, but I think I would be, some of his stuff is more complex than I can even play, so so it may not work out that well. But I do like Rodney Crowell. He's mm-hmm. pretty straightforward, and that would be kind of fun.
Cool. What is the one song you wish you'd written?
Probably Hotel California.
For the money.
Yeah.
For the money, yeah.
Well, I like the song, too, and it's a great, every time I hear it on the radio, I think, what a wonderful arrangement. Cause, mm-hmm. And those guys, they pay attention to that. They do songs the same way on stage as they did when they recorded them. And you have to be really good to be able to play guitar like those guys do. So.
You do. And they were, for mm-hmm. sure. One more sort of philosophical question for you. What's one piece of advice you'd give to your younger self starting out? I guess it's sort of, what would you have done differently kind of question.
Gosh. Yeah. Well, when you're that age, you aren't thinking along philosophical lines, I don't think. But I would have probably told myself, same thing that I'm telling people who want to write music now is just go for it, mm-hmm. Don't let anybody's opinion sway you from doing what you think is something you should be doing and something that is good,
In other words, kind of don't get too attached to a possible outcome. Other than
enjoy the process.
Exactly. Yeah. As the bit of dabbling I've been doing in songwriting isn't for anybody but me, really. Mm-hmm. And it's just about the process. I can be down here for hours, and the time just flies by when I'm doing it. So it's like, okay, I must be doing the right thing.
That's right.
And finally, I guess this is a trick question a lot of interviewers use. What question did you hope I would ask you that I haven't?
Probably, would you like me to buy your entire, I don't know what it's called, but all the songs I've written, would you like me to buy these and make you rich for the rest of your life? And I would say yes to that one.
Okay. Sure. Yes. I just want to thank you, Ray. This has been really fun for me, I hope together we pass the audition. Well, that's a wrap for this edition of North Coast Songwriter Spotlight. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you know a North Coast songwriter who you'd like to hear interviewed on this program, drop me a line at dlwhite46@gmail.com. And thanks for listening.